It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back, steps up, heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, and Nix makes the catch for the touchdown. He went up with the hands and caught it on the Hail Mary.
Boots one, returnable for Williams from his own 20. Lost the ball, and the Giants say they have it, and they do. Devin Thomas recovered it, but the rookie Jaquan Williams punched it out.
Manning out of the shotgun set, he's back to throw. Finds the pocket, deep ball down the left sideline, and it's going to be caught. Was he inbounds? Yes, Manningham on the sideline. Brady's under pressure, Brady's chased, Brady heaves one down the middle of the field into the end zone, a jump ball, and it's incomplete, and the ball game's over, and the Giants have won Super Bowl 46.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadows.
Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com, 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. A big weekend of NFL football. Giants obviously playing the early game last week on Thursday, but a ton of interesting things happening over the weekend, Lance, and lo and behold, through 3 weeks, we have a three-way tie for first place in the NFC East. Dallas, Philly, and the Giants all at 2-1, and the Redskins right behind at 1-2.
Dallas Cowboys squeaked out a victory against the Bucs. The Eagles fell to the Cardinals yesterday, and the Redskins had another down-the-stretch game with the Cincinnati Bengals after losing to the Redskins in heartbreaking fashion. You know, the teams are pretty much beating up one another, as was well expected even before the season started. And now the Giants getting ready for the Eagles. It's going to be another early division rivalry. It will be in Philly, and it will be against a team, John, that has been plagued by turnovers. The Eagles now have turned the ball over 12 times. They lost three fumbles yesterday in the Cardinals game. And credit to Arizona, it's not just Philly losing the turnover battle. They're also letting teams score off of those turnovers, and that's how you easily lose football games.
And the only division game so far within the NFC East is that Giants-Cowboys game. The Redskins, Eagles, and Giants have yet to play each other this year. Cowboys haven't played the Redskins or Eagles either. So something else to keep an eye on. And it's really a minor miracle that the Eagles sit there at 2-1, considering what their turnover issues have been. You figure those have got to, just by the law of averages, calm down over the course of the season, but a minor miracle they are where they are. The Cowboys did not play well yesterday either. They squeaked by the Buccaneers. Their offense was just ugly. They lose their safety, Barry Church, for the year. They had about, I think, six pre-snap penalties on offense in terms of false starts. Doug Free had three false starts. Jason Witten had two false starts. Jason Witten had a couple of drops in that game. So not a lot going on for the Cowboys either, a team that the Giants were able to put up 40 points on. The Cowboys barely score 16, and they struggle throughout the course of that game.
Well, one of the things you threw out even before the season that you were concerned about for the Cowboys and how they'd match up against the rest of the division was the offensive line play. Not just the penalties, but protecting Tony Romo. And those issues have pretty much come to the forefront over the first 3 weeks. They were plagued by penalties, remember, in that first matchup with the Giants. And they put together that impressive touchdown drive even with about five or six penalties. So they have been able to overcome some of those issues in the early weeks. But this was a Tampa Bay team that they went up against that had given up over 500 yards passing to the Giants. And yes, Tampa Bay did make adjustments, but at least on paper, you would have thought Dallas would have had better success through the air, and they did not. They were not able to put together consistent four quarters of play, and whether or not that comes back to haunt them later on will depend on how they bounce back against the Chicago Bears on Monday night next week.
Yeah, it appeared as though the Bucs made a lot of adjustments on defense. They didn't blitz as much. They kept their safeties deep, tried to prevent the Cowboys from going over the top to what the Giants did about four days ago. 201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. That's the phone number here. You can send in your questions on Twitter as well, the hashtag Giants Chat. Let's go to Stephanie down in Maryland. What's up, Steph?
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning.
I'm doing good. I always feel good when the Eagles lose and the Redskins. Unfortunately, the Cowboys escaped the game. My question is this. I know we got the Eagles coming up Sunday Night Football, and I like the job that Andre Brown is doing in the running game. But I'm curious, and I like the approach that the team is the next man up. But I'm curious, for this game, I guess the Eagles turn the ball over. Could we activate Darrell Scott and help out in the running game? And when will David Douglas ever get to see the field? And could we just put our best corner on Deshaun Jackson? Because that's what Patrick Peterson literally shot his little short tail there.
Well, okay, one thing at a time. David Douglas still on the practice squad, and with the way Ramsey's Barden played last week, and, of course, you Reuben Randall, I don't think you're going to see David Douglas much at wide receiver unless there are a number of injuries. Number two, let's see if Ahmad Bradshaw comes back first. If he comes back at running back, I don't think there's any room for Terrell Scott to even be active on game days. And I still think you want to see more of David Wilson. He was your number one pick this year. I think you kind of know what Terrell Scott is at this point. You want to see more of David Wilson on the other hand.
David Wilson also gives you contributions in special teams. Yeah, go on, Stephanie. What else you got?
Not seeing him in the preseason and on the special teams. I'm just saying, could he be used? Because we don't want to. Andre Brown's doing a very good job, but we don't want to like wear him down. The Eagles always had our running game.
Well, the Eagles,
they have a way to shut down our running game. But I think with these two running backs switching in and out, it could help out more.
Well, and appreciate
they will beat up on the Eagles while they're broken and beaten down now.
All right, Stephanie, appreciate the phone call and certainly touching on the running game. It was a bright spot against.
She's pumped.
She is pumped. She's excited. One Philly loss and already she's very confident that the Giants are going to take care of business and take advantage of the Philadelphia Eagles, and there's no reason why she shouldn't feel that way. As we mentioned right off the top, a team coming in that's turned the ball over 12 times, it's amazing that they're 2-1 to begin with.
A miracle, really is.
And if the Giants continue to play at the level that they did against the Carolina Panthers, there's no reason to think that they can't capitalize off of perhaps some mistakes or mishaps that the Eagles commit. But as she touched on with respect to the running game and piggybacking off of the point that you brought up, John, if Ahmad Bradshaw gets back into the mix, and the last time Tom Coughlin addressed the media, he said that he was pretty confident that Bradshaw will be able to suit up, but there's still a lot to go over the course of the week. He'll have to get on the practice field. So you have him, per se, hypothetically back in the mix. You like what you see out of Andre Brown, and you have David Wilson. You've got three running backs that are capable of contributing, and therefore there's really no room at this point for Darrell Scott to have his number called with respect to the running game. So the only way that he can make an impact right now would be on special teams.
Right.
But even there's even some depth on special teams at this point because you have Wilson, you have Randall, and Martellus Bennett even returned to kickoff a couple of games ago. So I don't know right now, based on the numbers game, if Scott is going to have an opportunity to dress. That's the bottom line.
201-939-4513, 201-939-4513. I feel like there was one other nugget in there from Stephanie. Oh, the best quarterback covering DeSean Jackson.
Correct.
And I think you probably will see Corey Webster on DeSean Jackson for most of that game. But we also have to see whether or not Jeremy Maclin's going to be back for the Eagles this week. He sat out last week with that hip pointer. You know, that's really a pain threshold type of injury. So I think there's a pretty decent chance you're going to see Jeremy Maclin. Remember this, too. Brent Celek's had a very good season early on. So another big target for Michael Vick.
And speaking of pain threshold, Corey Webster's dealing with an injury of his own now.
Fractured hand.
I mean, he did get it wrapped up. He came back out, played through it with Carolina. But you have to wonder,
how are you going to jam the line of scrimmage with that thing?
Absolutely. And it's going to be another injury they're going to have to manage during the weekend practice. Don't be surprised if they hold Corey Webster back a little to preserve him maybe for game day.
I mean, you can put a hard cast on that thing on during the week. You can't wear a hard cast during the game, but you can put it on during the week so it can't get injured anymore. I'm not sure how limited he'll be in practice, but yes, I mean, that could theoretically stop him and limit him over the course of the week.
By the way, there's been a lot of speculation, and Tom Coughlin didn't know exactly which play he got hurt on. He got wrapped up with Steve Smith early in the game. I don't know if you remember.
When they were kind of jamming back and forth?
I was curious whether that was the play where tied up in the helmet.
I don't know.
Perhaps that contributed to it. Just speculation at this point.
It's pure,
which I love to do here.
I think you should have a little investigation.
We may need to go down that storyline throughout this week.
All right.
Don't
try to pull Corey aside and try to figure out.
Well, perhaps we may have to have a one-on-one chat, and we'll keep our listeners up to date.
Well, I know he doesn't want to. He doesn't like you, so he's not going to want to talk to you about it.
Well, we may have to make some sacrifices this week for the good of the.
I believe his quote: "Lance is always too negative. I don't want to have a conversation."
Oh, so he's been talking to Vinny from PA apparently.
201-939-4513. Ed in Maryland, what's up, Ed?
Hey, what's up, guys?
What's going on, pal?
Stephanie, she was right on point. She was right on point, and the thing with the Eagles is just really burns me because out of the last nine times we played them, they beat us, like, what, seven times? And it's pretty much, as a diehard Giants fan, they owned us. So I just have a few things here, a few numbers that I want to pass everybody so the Giants can make this game a very must-win. To me, they're the reason why we don't have four Super Bowls. In the 08 playoffs, they knocked us out the playoffs. And in the 2010 season, that horrible Giants lost at home, that was probably like the worst loss I ever dealt with.
That's fair.
And pretty much Eli is 8-3 in the playoffs, right? Well, two of his playoff losses are to Philly.
Fair.
And that says a lot there. So we're 7-2 playing Philly in the last nine games. And if you guys had the numbers for the last three games playing Philly, I'm pretty sure we averaged around 60 yards rushing playing Philly for the last three or four games. For some reason, they just know how to stop our running game. So Stephanie C was right on point with that. And then also, pretty much, we don't play them at home, but we've lost five straight home games to Philly. And that's kind of gut-wrenching for your rival to just, you know, for a team as partial as the Giants to have your rival own you like that. And so, you know, I want the Giants to take this game as a must-win, because if we go down 0-2 this early in the East, that's going to hurt us down the line. And we don't want to play them the last game of the season and have to must-win at home and then be threatened to be swept. And one more number I want to run by.
Sure. It's got notes. I like
that.
It.
Was it.
He came prepared this morning.
In the 2010 season, right, if we'd have won that game at home, we would have been like 11-5 and would have had the number two seed. So Philly pretty much has ruined us from two playoff seasons, and we all know how confident and the Giants do in the playoffs. So they robbed us from two playoff wins, which probably would have gave us two more championships. I'll let you guys talk about it, but everybody needs to get the Giants pumped because we got to win this week.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate it, man. And, you know, he makes some good points. And one of the things that threw out there, and he kind of referenced it as he went along there, Lance, the Giants play the Eagles much better in Philadelphia than they play them here. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I'll have them by tomorrow's show, I think. Maybe you have them.
Well, I did look into the rushing yards
that
he alluded to about averaging about 60. Mm-hmm. The first meeting in Philadelphia, they actually ran for 102 yards against the Eagles. The second meeting, they were limited to just 29. And remember, that was the game that Vince Young started at MetLife Stadium, and the Giants were plagued by turnovers. Even Young was plagued by turnovers, and the Giants could not capitalize
probably
on that.
Probably the worst loss of last season.
Yeah, it was a very tough one to swallow, given that was a critical game that probably would have given them even a better finish than they had down the stretch last season before they went into the playoffs. But it goes without saying, though, when you play your division rival, it's going to be a hard-fought game. And the importance level skyrockets when you play a division rival. So, you know, that is pretty much integral in terms of making some movement in the division, especially since you've got three teams tied right now and you want to gain in early leverage. I think the promising factor in play right now, the last six quarters, I think is fair to say, the Giants have run the ball effectively. They did lose David Deal in the process. They've played a game of musical chairs with their running backs. If you get Bradshaw back, I think what will give the fans and the personnel the first view of is perhaps a multi-dimensional backfield. We've only really seen one game with Bradshaw out there and one game with Brown out there. You may have an opportunity now to see a three-headed monster where maybe all three running backs get opportunities, and it's important to show a defense not one style of a running back but multiple styles of a running back, because that can catch a defense off guard.
True, but I think a fair question needs to be asked, though. When all three guys do come back and are healthy, who's the workhorse? Or do you put Bradshaw back in his old role and maybe he was the most effective with his 10 to 12 to 13 touches a game, and let Andre Brown be that guy that carries it 15 to 20 and gets the bulk of the carries? Or do you put Bradshaw right back in there and he's getting the bulk of the carries? It's a very difficult decision who you end up making your one back that's going to really carry the load.
Well, they are not going to take away carries from Ahmad Bradshaw due to injury. I just don't see the Giants doing that. They don't have the track record to do that
But he wasn't exactly effective before he got hurt either.
But here's the other question to throw out. Has Andre Brown done enough? And I'm not taking anything away from the teams he's gone up against, but Carolina coming in did not have a very good rushing defense. Okay. Let's be honest. They took advantage of a bad defense.
Fair.
Has he shown you enough over six quarters to get more carries? Yes. But to move even up the depth chart.
I think you have to make sure you give him another opportunity to get a good number of carries to show what he can do for a third game, for sure.
So that's why I would make the argument, if hypothetically it was at 70-30 in terms of the share between Bradshaw and other running backs, I could see it maybe going to 60-40. I don't know if we've gotten to the 50-50 split yet.
I think in the next game when Ahmad Bradshaw gets back, Andre Brown and whoever the third running back is, I'm assuming it's going to be David Wilson, will have as many carries as Ahmad Bradshaw.
So you think they're at the point right now where they're willing to split the load?
I believe they are. Considering how well, or rather how poorly, this Giants team has run the ball the last season and a half, and you compare that to how they've run the ball with Andre Brown the last game and a half. Granted, small sample size, Carolina are a poor defense, I get all that, and it's all fair. But I think considering how they've struggled to run it the last year and a half, and you finally have a spark, if I'm coaching this team and I'm running this team, I'd have a hard time moving that player aside to go back to a formula with a running back and an offensive line that, quite frankly, and it's hard to argue this point, has not worked for a season and a half.
And Brown has shown that he's very effective in between the tackles. And the other bright spot about Andre Brown that hasn't received an awful amount of attention, he's been pretty critical in the receiving game. He had three catches in the other contest. Don't overlook that.
And in pass protection. Eli and Coach have both said he's done, not perfect, but he's done a very good job in pass protection. Obviously, very important. 201-939-4513. Bruce in New Jersey. What's up, Brucey?
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning.
What's
morning,
up,
fellas?
Go ahead, Bruce. What's on your mind?
My thing is what you're talking about now, Bradshaw and Brown. I think Brown follows his blocks, and Bradshaw goes off his blocks too quick.
Fair.
So Brown reminds me of Jacob when Jacob first came into the league. He's a power back. He follows his blocks, and he's strong on the delivery. Bradshaw, he's a cutback. I think he cuts too quick. He leaves his blocks. And he's good, but he's not as productive in following his blocks like I think the coaches would like him to do more of. With our running game, we're going to need a back, like y'all were discussing, to carry the load. I think he would be a pretty good running back to carry that load. I think Bradshaw should be the second back. I really think even in the two games that he played and they're coming in that Tampa Bay game, they stopped. Carolina for like 10 rushes, 10 yards or something like that.
Right.
And, I mean, you know, he got in there and just made them guys look like they wasn't even there, even though if they're not a great run stopper or not. For a guy that's been passed up five times and pushed around the lead, he definitely came in and made his impact with the Giants. That's the type of, you know, running we like. That's the type of, you know, game we play. And I think that he'd be a great addition to our backfield. Whether he's a one or a two, I still think that we would definitely need him in the running game against the Eagles.
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be a 1 and 1A type of scenario. And I guess Lance thinks it'll be slanted more towards Bradshaw. I just think Bradshaw, coming off an injury, the ineffectiveness of the running game the last year plus, the effectiveness of Andre Brown, I think it's pretty obvious you have to give Andre Brown another chance here to be that workhorse running back. And throw in this fact, too. The Eagles play that wide nine defense. They made a lot of moves in the offseason to shore up that run defense through the draft and through free agency. D'Amico Ryans, they drafted the big defensive tackle in the first round. So they've really tried to get better at stopping the run. But where you attack that wide nine is up the middle. You attack it with straight ahead power runs. And that's what Andre Brown is successful at. And I think Bruce made a good point. Bradshaw has the tendency to freelance. Andre Brown sticks with his blocks. I think it's a factor.
Well, Bradshaw likes to create things out of nothing at times. That's what he has the tendency to do. And Andre Brown is more disciplined and more patient. I think those are two strong words to describe him. And he's shown that he's effective. When he sticks to the scheme and he runs off the tackle, he runs off the guard, even if it's 1 or 2 yards that he can gain, he'll take it. And at the end of the day, you want to move forwards as opposed to backwards, where Bradshaw will take his fair share of chances and risks. So there is a distinctive difference in the style, but I still think you need both of those styles to take this running game to the next level.
No question, and I never thought the Giants were really going to be a 1-2 backfield situation this year. I think the Giants firmly believe that in today's NFL, you need to have two backs that you're willing to rely on to carry the load, and theoretically, right now, you know, I think with Bradshaw and the way Andre Brown's run, I think they're 1-1A right now. Whatever order you want to put them in is fine. It doesn't really make much of a difference. I think once you get to week four here, if in the first half Andre Brown has 4 carries for 10 yards and Bradshaw has 6 carries for 55 yards, I think Bradshaw is going to get most of the carries in the second half. I think you ride the hot hand here. Whatever running back happens to be doing well that week, that's who you ride. It's going to drive fantasy owners nuts, but when you're a football team,
they're not in the business of fantasy.
No, whatever is working that week, you go with it.
Yeah, and that's why I think that the Giants probably will take on that philosophy, because Andre Brown has proven that if you give him multiple carries, he can be consistent. You don't want to all of a sudden cut him down to four carries and expect him to continue this type of production.
Right.
It's very hard to maintain that. But you also don't want to completely eliminate Bradshaw from the mix. So I think that they'll start off, to me, more in the 60-40, but I can see as the season progresses. And also, who knows if Bradshaw's going to stay fully healthy.
Who knows
he doesn't
if
necessarily have that track record.
And who knows if Andre Brown's going to stay healthy. He's never had to carry the load before either. We don't know if he's going to be able to last.
I mean, prior to this, the guy had two carries for -1 yards. That came with the Broncos. That was his resume.
You're right.
Let's remember that.
I mean, he was joking during after that first game against the Bucks. I talked to him in the post-game interview locker room, and he goes, yeah, this is probably the most carries I've had since high school, so I'm kind of tired. And I asked him last week how he's, you know, really gotten his stamina up where he can carry them. He literally said, I'm running on the elliptical in the morning. I'm just trying to get in better running shape. I mean, you can't really get in better football shape unless by playing football, so he's getting there. But, you know, it's a process, and he'll get there eventually. 201-939-4513. Steve in D.C. What's up, Steve?
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's up, pal?
Hey,
Steve.
Listen, I just want to say, you know, go ahead and well, my sentiments as far as the running game, I think that we need to just go ahead and let Bradshaw come off the bench. I really don't think he's really been that productive for the last year and a half anyhow. And I think we need to just go ahead and save his legs for later on in the season. But my biggest concern would be the play of David Carr. I mean, you know, I definitely don't want to see Eli go down under any circumstances. But I just think that, you know, he's just doing more weightlifting than anything. And he may need to look at another backup, you know. And that will be, you know, what are you guys' thoughts on that? And I also just wanted to say I think that Linville Joseph is playing his heart out. And
yeah.
He really deserves a lot of credit for that defensive line, especially as far as handling the run. I just want to know your guys' thoughts on that.
Hey, Steve, I think, first of all, I think you bring a great point up on Linville Joseph. He's played great this year. A lot of people thought with Chris Canty out, that defensive tackle position would be a problem. But I think Linville Joseph has played great football. He's not only stopped the run, he's also gone to the passer a little bit, provided some pass pressure from the inside. I think Lance, he's been great.
I agree. Everybody talks about JPP, OC, and Tuck. They're not getting enough quarterback hits. They're not getting enough sacks. Well, don't overlook the defensive tackles. Linville Joseph made an impact immediately in the opener, got to Tony Romo. He's maintained that consistency. So those two defensive tackles have been really huge in keeping that consistency on the line.
And they stopped the run, except for that game against Dallas, where they did stop the run pretty well against both Tampa and Carolina. As for those 2 points, don't be so fast. I know I just said, look, you got to give Andre Brown the chance. He's played well, and I'm going to hold myself to that. But let's not try to push him out Bradshaw's side too quickly here.
Listen, I'll just rehash what I said earlier. Ahmad Bradshaw's not leaving town, and he's not leaving the playbook anytime soon. Because remember, as effective as Andre Brown was, and I'm not taking anything away from him, I think it's a great story for the Giants. It's nice to see guys step up. And Ramsey's Barden, another guy that we haven't thrown out there, and John Schmelk is smiling because we're going to get on him
where
a little bit later
calls?
On in the show.
Where are all the calls?
The guy
never plays. We get Ramsey's Barden calls all shows. He goes, well, 1:30. I don't get one Ramsey's Barden call. What's going on here? Where's Devin? I want Devin on the phone right now.
We need the Twitter comments. And I'm disappointed in myself for waiting at least 30 minutes to even bring up the name Ramsey's Barden. And I didn't do correct justice on this show. But I'm hoping the callers will pick up the slack. We will definitely digest and break down the play of Ramsey's Barden. We all tip our cap to Ramsey's Barden this Monday morning. And John Schmuck needs to be reminded of Ramsey's Barden's numbers, how effective he was, how wide open he was, and how he made that Giants passing game thrive in the absence of Hakeem Nicks.
He was absolutely terrific. He played a great game. He did a good job settling into that Carolina zone defense, which for most of the game, apparently the Carolina defensive strategy was we're not going to cover anybody and hope guys drop it. Because that is honestly kind of what it seemed like for most of 4 quarters. That was honestly, all joking aside, one of the worst defensive performances by a team I've seen in a long time. There was literally no resistance.
Apparently, the Panthers thought that the football field was 200 yards because those two safeties were playing in the North Pole if you looked at their scheme.
They really were.
And that gave the open field an opportunity to really develop for the Giants. They took advantage of that. And I think that also, in part, helped the running game, too, because when you have your secondary playing back, you're not having as many guys in the box. So that really was a benefit on multiple levels for the Giants. But Andre Brown and Ahmad Bradshaw are both going to be important to get this running game going. But at the end of the day, keep in mind, you know, Brown still has a very small sample size that the Giants are looking at. And there's things that he probably still needs to correct in regard to pass protection. He's been effective, but he'll be the first one to tell you in the coaching staff they need to see a little bit more consistency in that aspect before they're willing to have him take on a larger role. The other thing that Steve threw out was the backup quarterback situation,
oh, yeah.
which was a little odd that we're talking about this 3 weeks into the season, given Eli Manning's play. I don't think the Giants at this point are in the market looking at a backup quarterback. I think they're pretty content with the way David Carr is familiar with the playbook. And listen, if any injury occurs to Eli Manning, it hurts the Giants' chances no matter how you look at this.
Yeah, yeah. And Steve, you're still up here. Why are you concerned about the backup quarterback?
Well, I just didn't like his play at all when he came in the last time. I just thought he
they're running the clock out,
just,
Steve.
He wasn't prepared at all.
Well,
he had a couple passes. Just really didn't look prepared. And I guess it's really more about my concern. You know, I'm really, really pleased to see Eli's maturation. You know, I actually saw him, you know, over the last year, him really take huge steps, and I couldn't be happy with his play. And I'm just a little bit concerned, you know, obviously about what would happen if he did go down for a game or two. I think we've been real fortunate. I think not enough is said about him being so consistent, you know, as far as his starts. I think that's really the most impressive thing about him.
Well, listen, it's a fair point, Steve, and I understand where you're coming from. I wouldn't be too concerned with the efficiency of the offense when David Carr was in, because at the end of the day, John said they were just trying to really run the clock out and solidify the win. And also remember, at this point of the season, even if you did explore that situation and you brought in a quarterback, that quarterback now has to learn a new system.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
And that quarterback is not going to digest that system overnight.
And the bottom line here is, too, look, if Eli Manning's out 2, 3, even 4 weeks, you put David Carr in, he knows the system, he knows what he's doing, he's a veteran, you try to get away with playing good defense, running the ball, you're not going to score as many points, bottom line, all right? That's just the way it's going to go. But if you get into a knock-on-wood scenario where, you know, Eli's out for a season or misses the rest of the season, I don't care who your backup quarterback is. Guess what? Here's the bottom line. You're not winning anything anyway.
I mean, you lose Eli Manning, you're in a tough situation.
You aren't replacing Eli Manning with Eli Manning. There's a reason these guys are backup quarterbacks. You know what I mean? And not to take anything away from David Carr, could they win, you know, squeak out a 500 record with David Carr? Sure. But I love David Carr. You're not going to win the Super Bowl with him.
More of a reason why you want the running game to click, because if an injury occurred to Eli Manning, you'd want to lean on the running game, as you just touched on, and you'd put additional pressure on your defense. And listen, there's a lot of talent on this defense to hold their end of the bargain, but at the end of the day, I don't think the big topic of discussion upstairs is whether the Giants should pursue a different backup quarterback.
I feel like we shouldn't be talking about Eli Manning injury, but if it actually happened, both of us would be out of here so quickly and be totally blamed for this. And we'd blame Steve in D.C., but unfortunately they can't do anything to him.
Let's put it this way. This Big Blue Kickoff show may not be going into the archives.
Yeah, Jay at Irvington. What's up, Jay?
Hey, what's going on, man? I just wanted to comment on, first of all, the secondary of the Eagles, man. The way they looked out there yesterday, like they looked confused, discombobulated, and going against Hock Nicks and Victor Cruz and some of Ramsey's bar, and that's going to be kind of tough for them not to understand what's going on, and they work the way they're playing out there. And Ramsey definitely needs some more opportunities because he's running routes a little bit better than he was a couple years ago. He recognizes how to get his hands in front of people. He's using his body more. Like he's running routes a whole lot better. And secondly, the secondary of ours, the way Hill came in and Stevie came in and played, reading the quarterback, picking things. I think our secondary is going to play a little better as the week goes along. And what you think about Andre Brown definitely needs to start, because we haven't seen 100 yards from Ahmad Bradshaw in a long time. When the last time we had 100 yards? When the last time he had a big game of 20 to 25 yards? Like, I don't even remember that.
It's been a while.
That's basically all I had to say. I just think that they should keep it the way it is. I remember when Jacobs was starting, Bradshaw, you knew when Bradshaw came in and started playing, you knew he was going to one day eclipse Brandon Jacobs, and that's just how it looks with Brown. Like, he's just, eventually his play is just going to outplay Bradshaw, so we should just let that happen as opposed to just throwing him in there to start.
Well, Bradshaw did have a 33-yard run. I think it was against the Dallas Cowboys. It was late. He's had a couple of big runs, and he also had that 10-yard run. But you're right. Andre Brown has brought something additional to the table. And moving forward, the Giants are going to look the best way to preserve both running backs and have them work effectively with one another and complement one another so that they're using everybody to their true potential. In terms of the Eagles' secondary, I agree. I think that yesterday it was basically in disarray in terms of how the Cardinals were able to pick apart that secondary. Larry Fitzgerald, believe it or not, has a very good track record against the Eagles. If you look at his numbers, he continued that, and he opened things up for Kevin Cobb in the running game somewhat. They had some bursts on the ground in terms of getting that offense clicking. Nnamdi Asamoah has been beat multiple times throughout the course of this season. That's been a surprise considering his track record of being a shutdown corner. I know he and Kirk Coleman exchanged some words on the sidelines where there was some confusion throughout that game, and they also have Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. They've got the names, they've got the big playmakers, but if we're seeing anything over these first three games, you can take advantage of them and get them confused, and based on the personnel that the Giants are going to throw out there, there's no reason to think that the Giants should fear that they can't have a productive game through the air.
A little deeper, though, on the Eagles. They only allowed 292 yards yesterday. I mean, that isn't exactly a ton of yardage yet. They actually outgained the Cardinals in that game, 308 yards at 292. Obviously, the turnovers playing a big factor in the final score. Ryan Williams, you mentioned 13 carries for 83 yards, a long of 25. So if you take that 25-yard run out, he only carried it 12 times for 58 yards, which is still pretty decent. Not a bad day. Cobb, 17 of 24, 222 yards, two touchdowns, no picks. Larry Fitzgerald, you mentioned 9 targets, 9 receptions, 114 yards and a touchdown. Obviously a big game for him. But it's not as though the Eagles' defense got absolutely torched by the Arizona Cardinals and Kevin Cobb. I mean, they gave up 27 points, but a lot of those were points off turnovers. And the stat that I'm sure the Eagles don't like is that the Cardinals held the ball for nearly 35 minutes in that game. The Eagles only had it for 25. That has something to do with their defense being unable to get off the field.
Yeah, and that was also based on the fact that the Cardinals were able to run the ball effectively.
Right.
Like I said, the numbers don't jump off the page, but they got the big runs when they needed a first down, and they got some of the big passing plays when they needed a first down.
And keep this in mind, though, too, Lance. I'm sorry for interrupting you, but 7 of those Larry Fitzgerald catches for 105 yards and 177 of his 225 yards for Kevin Cobb all came in the first half. So, granted, the Cardinals had the lead, only
the play calling changes, though, in that situation.
Correct. It was 24-0, so you're going to obviously try to run the ball and everything like that.
Milk the clock.
Yep, 100%, right, and that obviously changed what the Cardinals were going to do. But to me, the time of possession in the first half, 18 minutes for the Cardinals, 11 for Philadelphia, obviously a very stark difference for only one half of football. But it's not like the Eagles' defense got absolutely torched. That's all I'm saying.
And they made adjustments in the offseason to address some of their biggest concerns. DeMeco Ryans was probably their biggest pickup because last year, if you look at the Eagles' defense, that linebacker core got killed on the ground. I mean, it was one big game after another, and that's why the Giants had over 100 yards in that first meeting. They took advantage of a very suspect Eagles, not just secondary at times, but specifically the linebacker core. And what's also dangerous about Philly, and this is why pass protection for the running backs is key. This week, they're going to go up against the likes of Trent Cole and Jason Babbitt. If your running backs are not in position to get those guys on the ground and keep him away from Eli Manning, that's going to be a troubling aspect for the Giants' O-line.
And throw this in too, Lance, and this has to be a factor as you move ahead here. This game against the Cardinals for Philadelphia was a classic trap game. You're coming off a big win against Baltimore. You're looking ahead to the Super Bowl champion Giants the next week. You're playing, it's the Arizona Cardinals. Yeah, they beat New England last week. Well, guess what? They're not really that good. They can't play that good 2 weeks in a row. This is your classic emotional letdown game, coming off a big win, looking ahead to the Giants. And it happens to every team in this league.
That's a good point.
Where they let down a little bit. Again, I'm not making excuses for the Eagles. They've played poorly this year. And 12 turnovers, 4 per game is unacceptable. You're not going to win anything doing that. But I would expect the Eagles to come out with a better effort against the Giants last week than what they showed against the Cardinals in Week 3.
Plus, it's a home game, and they know that the Giants have had tremendous success in Philly, and it's a divisional game. I mean, you don't need a lot of motivation when we talk about division rivalry games.
No.
It goes without saying.
All right, back to our phones. Frank in New Jersey. What's up, Frank?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's up,
doing
pal?
Well, Frank.
Got a couple of quick questions. First, I just want to comment on I forgot who said it. I don't know if it was Lance or about Carr not able to win a Super Bowl. If we remember right, when Sims went down,
yeah,
we probably said the same thing about Hasta. Yeah, he can't win a Super Bowl, and he did it. So, I don't
know.
I think Carr could do it if that ever happens. I hope not. But
Frank, you know what? I understand what you're saying, but keep in mind, too, that 90 yeah. Giants team was a team built around the running game, and it was a team built around defense. This Giant team is a team that's built around the passing game. So Eli Manning, to me, and you can disagree with me if you want, I think is much more important to this team than Phil Simms was to the 90 team. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, you're correct. Yeah, you're right. That defense back then was – couldn't compare to defense nowadays.
Right.
But anyway,
go right ahead,
second
Frank.
Point.
Yep.
Yeah, my opinion, I think Brown should start over Bradshaw. And if you guys could tell me, I don't know if you guys know the history or something, where that saying or that mentality about you don't lose your job to injury, you know? And what's my third?
Well, you know what, Frank, hold on 1 second. While you think, I'll answer your Bradshaw point.
Okay.
And I don't think he is going to lose his job. It's not like Ahmad Bradshaw is not going to play. It's just that he's going to maybe, instead of rushing it 18 times, he's going to rush it 14 or 15 times. It's not like he's losing his job, but I think you have to give Andre Brown that opportunity to run the ball, considering he's run the ball better in the last game and a half than the Giants have in almost 2 years. So I think you have to kind of give that guy a chance to go back out there again.
Yeah, no, I don't mean lose his job completely. I mean, he may be platoon them, you know, but I think Brown should carry the workload. But also that mentality about you don't lose your job, I mean, if the player that went in for you and is doing great, why go back to someone who wasn't doing that great, you know? And then my third question was about I'm going back to the Tampa game with the kneel down.
Yeah.
You think the Tampa Bay coach, you think he did that this week just because, okay, I gotta do it again, because if not, then I'm going back on my word? And do you think other teams will now pick up and start doing it again, doing that?
I don't think other teams will start doing it, Frank, honestly. But to me, the whole thing is going to kind of go away now, because once teams know what's coming, their offensive line is going to be prepared for it. They're not going to be caught off guard. No one's going to get hurt. What happened this week, I'm not sure if you saw the game, a Tampa Bay player jumped off sides, blew up the Cowboys center, and knocked Tony Romo down. Now, that's going to happen sometimes. But once now that teams are ready for it, this whole thing is going to become a non-story, in my opinion. I don't think it's going to be that big of a deal.
All right, thank you, guys.
Appreciate it, Frank.
Thanks for the phone call. It's part of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers playbook at this point.
Exactly.
So you're right. Teams are going to strategize.
Tape.
Yeah, they're going to know what to expect. That's why Jason Garrett didn't blow up in the face of Shiano, because I don't think in the long run the Cowboys were surprised.
And I don't think that's really Garrett. I've never seen Garrett really blow up at anybody.
Not as emotionally
calm,
fired
cool,
up.
Collective guy, yes.
No, that's true.
If you put him on the emotional scale, I'd put Coach at around an 8. I'd put Garrett around like a 3.
Yeah, Jerry Jones would give a more intriguing post-game press conference than Jason Garrett.
Or Rob Ryan.
Fair enough. For example,
Rob Ryan would be up right there with Coach Coughlin at the 8. I would leave the 9 and 10 areas for the Harbaughs. They have a tendency to get a little upset about things, I think is fair to say. From time to time, Jim Schwartz would be in that 9 to 10 category. Also, a bit of a firebrand there. Rex Ryan would be hanging out in the 9s, you know, things like that. Andy Reid, on the other hand, he's more like Garrett. He'd be hanging around in the 5s and the 4s, somewhere in the middle.
And Shiano really is in the middle, too.
Yeah, he is.
You don't see him get all worked up. But there was an interesting article. I don't want to spend a good portion of the show breaking down the ins and outs of Greg Shiano, even though he did have a track record at Rutgers, by the way, of pulling that play.
And by the way, apparently it forced, in a matter of 3 years, it almost forced 6 fumbles.
So it was successful.
Yeah.
But there was an interesting article in Yahoo this week that he doesn't have the best track record around the league, even while he was a college coach, because he wouldn't be very open to the pro player personnel from coming and watching Rutgers recruits as they scouted the players
really?
To get ready for the draft. And that's why a lot of people were taken back when he got the position and accepted it in Tampa Bay. So coming in, supposedly, and this is all reported by Yahoo, he didn't have a very strong track record, and perhaps that's played a role in terms of how opposing coaches view Shiano.
So not a great relationship with current pro front offices coaching staff. I didn't hear that. It is very interesting. See, Lance, when you have a lot of free time, you don't go out a lot. You don't go hit the town.
Yeah.
You blow off people's birthday parties. You can read all these articles on Yahoo Sports. I appreciate that.
I use my time well. But getting back to another point that Frank brought up, I think he was asking big picture, where did this philosophy come that you don't lose your job due to injury? And it's pretty much been widespread across the league for years. I think there's multiple examples that we could bring up.
Right.
But I think the other thing to weigh here is financial. if you have a lot of money tied up in a running back, and I'm not saying they're paying millions of dollars to Ahmad Bradshaw, but they have money invested in him.
Well, they are actually paying him a couple of million, so there you go.
So it's not as if you're all of a sudden going to give the guy five carries because he got hurt. You want to get some return on your investment.
Right. I'm putting that aside, too. You have to take a look at how the player was playing before the injury. I mean, if a guy's playing poorly, he gets hurt, a guy comes in and outperforms the guy that was playing poorly, then he's not losing his job because of his injury. He's losing his job because he's being outperformed than what he was doing before the injury. And again, it's a very small sample size for Bradshaw this year, the same way it's a small sample size for Andre Brown this year. So you don't want to do anything too drastic. But I think, and we've discussed this a bunch of times now, you have to give Andre Brown the chance to continue this. And with the type of back he is, he's not going to be able to show that with five or six carries. He needs to get into the double digits here and get a couple series to get into a rhythm and pound, pound, pound.
Once the sample size gets larger and the effectiveness continues and Bradshaw comes back, if they feel that with the same scheme, Andre Brown is picking up more yardage, then the Giants could make more of an argument that we're going to have maybe more of a 50-50 split. Until the sample size grows, I still think Bradshaw has the edge.
201-939-4513. Allen's in D.C. What's up, Allen?
What's going on, guys?
How are you?
What a great game against Carolina. It's nice to see the Giants get to an early groove and an early lead and maintain it throughout the game.
A rare easy victory.
What's going on with Ramsey's Barton? He came out of nowhere. I took a gamble and put him on my fantasy because nobody heard about this guy, obviously, except for the guys who listen to this program. And he produced. My thing is, how's Hickson and Nix? And will he get another shot against Philly this week?
I would certainly expect Akeem Nix to be back. They'll obviously continue all the tests on Dominic Hickson. There's really no way to see Allen whether or not Hickson's going to be back until they complete those tests. But look, Ramsey's Barden has had limited opportunities in his time here. He's had windows here and there to perform, and quite frankly, most of the time he hasn't. And sometimes he has, and then he gets hurt. So he really hasn't taken advantage of the opportunity he's had because of injuries and such things. But he did a great job last week finding the holes in that cover two zone that the Panthers are playing, running those deep in cuts, running those slants, running those posts. He caught the ball. He went up to get it a couple times. He wasn't looking for that safety over his shoulder. And he finally did what so many Giant fans have wanted to see Ramsey's Barden do, and he proved his doubters very, very wrong, at least for one game, but it is a small sample size.
Also, guys, we got our nasty back, our D's back. I'd like to see OC and Tuck and JPP, back into their element. And, I enjoyed every minute of the game, and I look forward to seeing the Dream Team upcoming.
Sounds good, Allen. And the one thing the Eagles have had problems with, and thanks for the call, is protecting Michael Vick. He's been holding the ball a very, very, very long time this year. And that's one of the reasons he has so many sacks and why he has so many turnovers. The quarterback gets hit. Whether it's a fumble or throwing the ball as you're getting hit, you're going to have some picks.
And the problem with Michael Vick in the past, when he takes his fair share of hits, ultimately that's going to lead to a severe injury that could cost him to miss some games. So they need to do a better job protecting him, and he needs to do a better job of getting rid of the football. And a lot of the turnovers, by the way, is also due to me, his questionable decision-making.
Correct. He tries to force things in. What made him so good a couple years ago, he was much more willing to just give what the defense gave him, or take, rather, what the defense gave him. Throw that little slant, throw that little dump off to LeSean McCoy, get your 6 or 5 yards and fight on second or third down. It seems like he's back to holding the ball, trying to make those big plays down the field every play, and it's just not working.
Or also trying to squeeze it into double or triple coverage at times, especially when you have tight space, because look at where most of these turnovers are occurring, by the way, in the red zone. They're missing a lot of opportunities to even walk away with field goals because he's trying to make something happen that hasn't created or developed at that point. So that's why they need to be much more effective, like the Giants at times, in the red zone. You can't settle at times. You got to take what the defense can give you, as John just touched on. But by the way, great question out of Allen. And I don't know if you really answered the question perfectly. You may have danced around a little bit.
I thought my answer was pretty good.
It was okay, but I think there's room for improvement. He specifically asked, where did Ramses Barden come from? And maybe you could take the time to now give us a little story and perhaps go over the history of Ramses Barden and what the week preparation was like.
Ramses Barden is a young man born on the West Coast. But Ramses is obviously a third-round pick of the Giants, I guess, back in 2009? Sounds about right.
Look at this. Yeah. I got to fill in the story now. Unbelievable.
This is his fourth season. I was just making sure I had the math right in my head. So he's a third-round pick in 2009. He's battled injuries throughout his last 3 or 4 years with the Giants. He's been in and out of the lineup. He's shown the inability to get separation against some of the faster corners, doesn't have the best speed in the world, hasn't been consistent when he has been given the opportunity to play. Injuries have plagued him, and with the chips down and the wide receivers out, he stepped up against the Carolina team, and he made some great plays using his size, using his height. He actually reminded me a lot of the type of plays that Roy Williams used to make when Roy Williams was in his prime, those type of deep in cuts, same type of body type as well. Roy Williams, I don't think he's in the league anymore, to be honest with you, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. But, look, he did what the Giants thought he could do when they drafted him. And it took for him a while to get to this point to have the big game. But, and I think the coaches are stressing this to Ramses this week. Just one game. You got to come out. You got to do it again. Consistency has been one of his issues. Let's see him do it again next week. And you got to wonder now if Nix and Hixon, Lance, we talked about this with Andre Brown and Bradshaw, if Nix and Hixon are both healthy next week, Ramses Barden coming off a monster performance, do you see Barden as that third guy now instead of Dominic Hixon, considering the type of game that he had?
Well, he's no threat to Akiem Nix. That goes without saying. But
obviously,
you're right. Dominic Hixon, you know, he could certainly eat into his playing time, depending if they like some of the schemes and plays that Ramses Barden is involved. I think another positive to take away from Barden's performance is Eli Manning now probably has a little bit more confidence and faith in him. And they showed that after the game where they hugged it out. And Ramses Barden, well, he was, you know, appreciative that Eli kept looking his way and Ramses didn't let him down. You know, one of the big issues early on in this season has been sometimes the receivers have not bailed out Eli Manning.
That's true.
Victor Cruz, for example, has had some mental lapses. And Barden's had some mental lapses in the past. Not necessarily this season, but if you look back at past preseasons and past regular season games, that wasn't an issue in this last contest. So that was a big step in the right direction for him. But yes, to answer your question, I think he definitely made a case that he could carve out a bigger role moving forward. He's not going to be a top two receiver on this team, but when they go wide or they're in the red zone, perhaps they'll call his number more often than not.
And the best part, and I was going to bring this up, you know the one place the Giants didn't go to Ramses Barden in the game last week? The red zone. And that's where everybody wanted him to play.
Well, they got Martellus Bennett now.
Just throw it high. 201-939-4513. Oh. Another topic that likes to get me boiled up here, but I think Juan is a supporter, so we're going to see what he's going to say. Juan's up in Quebec. Juan, good morning, pal.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's happening, pal? Doing,
you know, I'm still the biggest fan in Canada. Hey, I got a couple of things I want to say first.
Yeah.
Comments, and I got a question, so
sure.
I'll let you guys have at it. First of all, let's just congratulate them on that big win last week. It was a total domination.
Yep.
On to this week, play Philly and Philly. Always a big game. It's a division game. They're tough, familiar foes. I think the problem they give us, in particular, the Eagles, is that their defense is ridiculously fast, and they're creative with their athletes on offense.
Yep.
My comment on offense is that, you know, I hear a lot of talk about Brown and Mike Bradshaw. Let's not forget, I mean, Bradshaw kind of got his job in the same way, because everybody expected Jacobs to be the big guy. He was doing a lot of dancing around, and, you know, I even think San Francisco fans are going to be upset with him as well, but, you know, that's a whole another day, right?
Yeah.
I think what Brown gives us on offense is exactly what we wanted Jacobs to give us, except for he was giving it to us sporadically.
I agree. True.
You know, and I think that just like the fans, the coaching staff grew impatient with that. So, I think it'll work itself out. It always does. In these situations, I think especially now because, you know, Bradshaw's kind of still healing. I think even with the foot injuries from, you know, from the last couple of years, you know, I think this will actually be a nice breath of fresh air for him to actually just be able to fully heal while we have somebody that's being productive.
That's a good point. No need to rush back at all, Juan.
Right, absolutely. Another thing, I want to say this about Eli, because the guy is playing lights out. I think that for him to trust Barton and Bennett the way he did last week, I thought that was just spectacular. And I don't see that with a lot of quarterbacks, even the veteran ones. And does not Barton, the fear that all the fans have, well, not fear that he's not going to play, but he's played well last week, but he reminds you of Tim Carter in his status, doesn't he? Remember the whole Tim Carter thing? Everybody loved his speed, but he could never get on the field?
Well, you know what? I think in that respect, yes, I think they're very different players in that Barton's big but not that fast, and Tim Carter was a speed guy. But in terms of them, you know, kind of always being on the fringe and having, you know, an opportunity here or there, not necessarily taking advantage of it and not earning his playing time, I think the two guys are a little similar. And even Ron Dixon to a certain extent.
Yeah, oh, my God, I can't believe you brought him. I was just thinking of him. I got one more thing to say, and I got my question.
Sure.
I think that the fans, sometimes we don't give the Giants enough credit as the opponents are giving us. I mean, I think we put a lot of fear into a lot of people. Each week, I mean, when you look at our lineup, I mean, especially now with the emergence of our running game, I mean, with Nix and Cruz, Eli playing lights out, Bennett's playing well, I think we put a lot of fear in our opponents.
Heck yeah.
And no one's really talking about that. We always talk about how, okay, now we got Eagles this week, and what are we going to do? And I mean, listen, we are an explosive team. We should not, you know, as fans, we should appreciate what we have right now. Because I remember those years with the Danny Cannells and all that. Well, we sucked.
Nah, Juan, you're right. Hey, look.
You know, we weren't that good, and we have a very explosive team. We should appreciate what we have.
And honestly,
we put a lot of fear in opponents.
Yeah, Juan, and I've been saying that. Me and Lance have been saying it here for 3 or 4 years when fans would call up and complain about Eli Manning, when, you know, before he won that second Super Bowl and fans were completely on board with him. Think back to when you didn't have that franchise quarterback and you don't even know who your quarterback's going to be week in, week out, if he can put up 20 points. Now you're worrying about if Eli's going to put up a 35 spot or he's going to put up 24, where it's a given your quarterback play every week. It's a totally different world.
Absolutely. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I heard the caller talking about David Carr. And I was asking myself, you know, there are so many teams even now in the league that are still looking for a quarterback. You know, like they're struggling week to week, and we got Eli the Iron Man out there playing every week, playing well.
Juan, your biggest problem should be trying to find the backup. That should be your biggest problem if you're an NFL team. You're right. There are plenty of teams out there that are still looking for their one reliable starter. So if you're a team looking for a backup, that should be your worst problem at this point.
I agree 100%. My question is, and I get out of here, is, Kevin Gilbride's success lately, I think, especially in particular like with Tampa Bay and Carolina, like how are we actually going to attack Philly? I mean, because I know I talked about us being explosive, but Eagles defense is pretty tough. And I don't think we're just going to be out there winging the ball like that. I think we have to open that up. In your opinion, what do you think we're going to do to try to get them? I'll just try to open them up a little bit.
I think you're going to try to attack them up the middle. I think it's very important this week to establish that running game early. See if the Eagles really did fix those problems that plagued their defense last year. And I think you saw the Cardinals run the ball on them this week, Juan. You saw them keep that Eagles offense off the field. They won the time of possession battle in the game 35-25. In the first half, it was 19 minutes to 11. So I think you want to try to run the ball, establish it, make the Eagles bring that extra safety up. Then you could try to make that big play down the field, which the Giants have become so proficient at.
I agree. I think we're going to win anyway this week. I really do.
All right, well,
I don't think it's going to be as close as people think it is.
Huh? Well, you know, we'll see. You can talk about talent. It's all a matter of how these two teams play and whether or not they play well. If the Giants come out and they play the way they did against Carolina, they're probably going to win. If they come out and play the way they did against Tampa, they're probably going to lose. If the Eagles played the way they did against Baltimore, they're probably going to win. If they play like the garbage game they did in week 1 or week 3, they're probably going to lose by a few touchdowns. So it all depends how well these teams play. Their talent is pretty comparable.
It's It's been a little Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde early this season, and it's normally like that. It's hard to really gauge how good or how bad a team is because we've seen a lot of up-and-down performances. But in terms of how the Giants are going to attack the Eagles, you just threw out, I think, running up the middle, which is an important facet. I also like the Giants' advantage of spreading the Eagles' secondary out wide. It worked last season. Remember, Victor Cruz had one of his biggest breakout games against the Eagles in Philly early on in the season where he caught those two touchdowns, one where he out-jumped Namdi, and another one where he had a short catch and just ran up the left sideline. But the Giants have weapons. You know, you look at the Eagles, they've got tremendous depth at the safety and corner spot. Yeah, but the Giants also have a lot of guys that they can spread those guys out. So maybe they can't afford to double one Giants receiver. It's going to be a battle of man-on-man wars, and whoever has the edge in regard to that will likely be the team that walks out with a victory.
All right, we'll take one more caller. And then we're going to do our picks, and I want to go through the standings with you really quick before you say goodbye. Jay's up in Connecticut. What's up, Jay?
Hi, this is Jay Asbury. I wanted to speak about how big of a game Ramses Barden had and what it affects the future as a third wideout and what you think about Eli's number one in the NFL.
Hey, I think right now you have to consider making Ramses Barden that third wide receiver. Not completely, but I think you have to give him some more opportunities in that spot. Move Cruz inside, which you usually do anyway. You put him in the slot. That's where he's most effective. You have Barden and Nix outside in the three wide receiver position, and you give him the opportunity to do it again. Now, my question is, we saw Barden do great against his own defense against Carolina next week. I want to see if he has the speed and the playmaking ability to get separation against a man-on-man cornerback that can play, like a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, like a Nnamdi Asamoah. I want to see if he can do it against those guys. I think that's going to be a great test this week to see if he can do it.
He's going to need to adjust against a variety of different defenses. That, I think, is a great point. But also keep this in mind when talking about how big of a role Barden's going to have moving forward. Maybe the Giants are now looking that Barden is building confidence in himself and his teammates.
Sure.
And maybe we can now solely use Hixon on special teams and not wear this guy down so much given his injury history. So I think it helps the Giants in many ways to now have Hixon solely focus more on special teams. Barden could carve out a bigger role on offense, and you don't need to worry about putting guys in situations where they can get hurt. Because remember, like Bradshaw, Hixon has a big injury history. The last thing you want to do is overwear him between special teams and receiving.
And I want to go back to something Juan said in passing there, and I think it was a great point that I want to just point out again, because I think he's 100% right. Last week, the Giants' offense was missing their starting wide receiver, their starting right tackle, their starting running back, their third wide receiver, and they still scored at will. He gave credit to Eli Manning. Let's give some credit to Kevin Gilbride here, who was able to mix and match and plug in players in his offense, in his system, and lose absolutely zero effectiveness. As much as fans like to call up and really complain about him, which it is just insane to me considering how good the offense has been, two Super Bowls, give the offensive coordinator a lot of credit here, how he put this team together last week with all those injuries, and they really did not miss a beat for a second.
And another reason why I think Andre Brown has been so effective, he was on the practice squad all of last season.
Yeah.
Do you know how much time you can take to digest the playbook, learn the Giants system, learn the schemes, learn what it takes to be a good pass protector? That now is paying off. If you get a guy in free agency and just pluck him into the system, who's to say that that guy is going to have as much success as a guy that the Giants showed patience with in developing and moving along slowly? I think that's the greatest thing about this organization. They don't rush guys along. They let them digest. They let them mold into the player that eventually you're going to see, such as now in Barden and Brown. So that's a positive for the Giants. You can't have too much depth on a team.
We'll wrap up with our picks, but I want to touch on the standings here first, Lance. Without you looking at them, I want you to keep it closed. I want to play a game with you first, all right? How many NFL teams...
This is so exciting, a game.
...are either 3-0 or 0-3?
In the entire league,
yes,
AFC and NFC?
Entire league.
I think there's a total, I want to say, of 5.
Bingo! Excellent work. But to me, that's an extremely low number for 3 weeks. You figure you'd have 8 or 9 teams that are 0-3 or 3-0. And I think it speaks to what you said, how up and down the league has been this year, how there's a lot of parity. And here's the biggest upset. Of those teams that are 0-3 and 3-0, Saints 0-3, Arizona Cardinals 3-0. Who would have predicted that?
I mean, the bottom line is it's all about execution and which teams do it better. And the Saints are not executing when they need it to count, but the Cardinals are. And you're right. Nobody would have predicted that come early on in the season that those two teams would have been in their respective positions. They would have probably thought the complete opposite.
And I'll tell you what, at Green Bay for the Saints next week, 0-4. Home versus San Diego, not an easy game. The Saints could be staring 0-5 right in the face. Then after that, at Tampa, not an easy game. They played the Giants and the Cowboys, both close. At Denver, tough. Home versus Philly, home versus Atlanta. At Oakland, San Francisco, at Atlanta, at Giants. They could be looking at 3-8 here through 11 games. It could be a bad year for the Saints.
Well, first of all, when you're 0-3, the percentages are against you. I think I saw a graphic earlier today about 2% of those teams actually wind up making the playoffs. So those odds are hurting them to begin with. But here's the biggest surprise about the Saints. Let's throw out how bad their defense is and how good their offense is on paper. Given all of the offseason turmoil and the bounty situation, if there was any team that I thought was going to make the biggest statement when they had the first opportunity to play a meaningful football
game,
we're
mad and we're going to show it.
Absolutely. That's what's stunning.
I agree.
The hunger, the desire, the exclamation points, none of it is apparent. And that's what I expected out of this Saints team. I thought they were basically not going to hold back here. I thought they were going to look to shut up the league.
Yeah. And the commissioner, for that matter, clearly not too thrilled with
him. None of that has been evident.
No. Maybe they're just not that good.
Well, their defense certainly is not that good. But their offense is better than they're playing right now.
A lot of turnovers, though, too. I mean, you can't turn the ball over this much if you're the Saints.
Yeah, Drew Brees, I think, has, what, 5 or 6 interceptions through 3 games?
And if you have a 3-score lead on the Chiefs, I don't care what quarter it is, you got to hold that game. The Chiefs' offense was terrible. Jamal Charles had 6 rushes last week. He went for 200 yards yesterday. Come on.
But the Saints' offensive line, that's the big killer.
Yeah.
You know, Drew Brees doesn't need a lot of time to throw the football, but if the guys are right in his face, even when he takes one step back, it's hard for even great quarterbacks like him to get
and
rid of it.
People don't talk about it, but remember, they lost Carl Nix last year, one of the best guards in football, and that's a big loss. Now, I want to do our picks really quick here. Lance and I were touched base at around 3:30. We said, we didn't do any picks this week. This is a problem. So we picked all the 4 o'clock games via text. We picked a game tonight. Last night, rather, and the game tonight. And now the boring thing is that we picked every single game the same.
Well, we did differ on one.
No, we didn't.
Yes, we differed on the Eagles-Cardinals game. Oh, yeah, you picked Philly. Unless you're now changing your text here.
Oh, Arizona. I see it there. I had you down for the wrong team. You're correct.
There we go. That's what gave me the edge. So now, what did I do? I picked up a game, I'm assuming, because we both picked the Packers for tonight. Tough game against the Seahawks, obviously.
All right, well, let's see. Let me take a look here. We got... both of us, okay, well, you had the Cardinals, and I had the Eagles, so you go to 500 with that at 4-4. I languish at a brutal 3-6 after that. Then the rest of the games, both of us picked Atlanta, which is a win. Then both of us had the Broncos and the Patriots, which
nearly
are both losses.
Squeaked another comeback. Well, New England had the lead and coughed that up.
I am a just hideous 4-8 right now. You are a nearly as bad 5-7.
That's the battle of mediocrity. Well, last season, if I'm correct,
Oh, no, wait a second. That can't be right. You are 5-6, excuse me.
Oh, so we're improving here all of a sudden.
Yeah, I'm trying to be fair here. I'm not trying to give you extra losses.
Well, last season, you beat me by 2, and I think we both had records around 500, if not worse.
No. I was like 4 games over. You were about at 500. Barely over. But both of us had the Packers tonight, so very exciting. The Seahawks have been playing well, though, so it's interesting to see how they play tonight at home. And their defense is pretty strong against a team like the Packers.
Well, they're usually strong at home, too.
And that, remember that no huddle the Packers like to run. If that Seattle crowd is as loud as it usually is, it's very difficult to run that no huddle.
And Green Bay hasn't been as efficient as they could be. Remember, they had struggles against the Bears. I think the bright spot was they were trying to work Cedric Benson in this season. That's the biggest difference
with
the Packers'
running
offense. They don't want to be just a pass-happy offense. They want to be balanced.
Hey, and I'll tell you what, once JerMichael Finley's agent starts questioning Aaron Rodgers, I wonder what the heck's going to happen there.
Well, that relationship is a headache to begin with. Yeah. If you remember, Finley came out last offseason and said he was never on the same page as Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, whose fault is that?
Well, whose fault is that? How about telling all the fantasy owners that had him that giving them a heads up? I mean, you know, JerMichael Finley is a bit selfish in that situation.
Lance.
But we get back to the bigger picture here. There has been a trend there that relationship has been on rocky roads. Yeah. And the last thing you want is your agent to speak up for you.
I have the feeling that JerMichael Finley might be one of those guys that thinks he's a lot better than he actually is. Maybe you shouldn't lead the league in drops. Then maybe you could talk a little bit.
He's got talent because the bottom line is he's a tight end that's essentially a wide receiver. So I have to give him that. The problem is
drops.
Yeah. He can't hold on to the football.
If you're a wide receiver and you lead the league in drops, or a tight end, you lead the league in drops, guess what? Pipe down. I don't want to hear from you.
Remember, that was Victor Cruz's biggest issue. He perhaps could not be on the Giants team right now if he didn't work those kinks out.
So, JerMichael Finley, catch the ball and then, you know, pipe down about the league MVP. Okay? League MVP. You're JerMichael Finley. Shut up. All right? Seriously.
Yeah, I know. Finley's got to start making plays. He's got to do his talking on the football field. You know, enough chatter off the field. You're not going to earn your paycheck that way.
All right, Lance will be with you tomorrow morning. I'll jump in as soon as I'm done with my meetings. We'll try to have a little fun. Lance is going to try to get somebody on from the Eagles. We'll try to get Dave Spadaro on. He's the Eagles guy from the website. Does a great job. We'll drop him a note. He's usually very good to us. Hopefully he'll join us tomorrow. And then we'll talk some Giants-Eagles, do a little hardcore preview. Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by Andrew Mark, comes your way every weekday morning from 9:30 to 10:30 on Giants.com and on your Giants mobile app. Make sure you tune in. We'll see you next time right here on Giants.com.
Have a good one.